All right, ready? Let's do this.
Yeah.
Three, two, and... What's happening, everyone? Welcome to the Celtics Talk Podcast. We're coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee is just 99 cents. Any size, that's 99 good reasons to switch. Kyle Draper and A. Sherrod Blakely joining you. A busy week this past week for the Celtics.
It is. I could use some of that Cumberland's coffee after Paul Pierce night. Man.
Dude, what you doing over there stretching like you know, worked out for 2 hours, then had to run a marathon. Come on, big fella.
This body doesn't come prepackaged like this. It requires some fine-tuning.
You ain't even got young kids, dude, so you could sleep in. I mean, let's keep it real. You could sleep in till like 8, 9.
What, you can't?
I can't, bro. I get the kiddies off to school every morning.
Can they walk?
I'm at the bus stop.
Can they walk?
Yeah.
Can they talk?
Unlike
Boom.
You, big fella. Unlike Boom. You, I like to give my kids hugs and kisses before they leave. You know what I mean? And so I like to show them some love. But
I'm sure Nicholas would beg to differ on
I
that.
Know,
but,
right?
But anyway.
Hey, man, we got a big-time show coming up. Cedric Maxwell, that's right. One of 23 players, coaches, execs, however you want to call it, who have had their number or name retired in the TD Garden rafters. He is joining us on the Celtics Talk Podcast. We'll get into the Paul Pierce stuff and the current state of the Celtics. But first, here we are, Sherrod. One more game to go before the All-Star break. And let's be honest, the All-Star break can't come soon enough.
Oh, God, they need it. They need it badly. I mean, they – outside of the fact that they're just not playing good basketball, I think from a physical standpoint, they really need this break to come. Give Marcus Smart and that injury heal, time to heal. Shane Larkin, who hasn't played in God knows how long, a chance to get out there. And he's not a huge player for them, but he's a guy that can help swing the momentum of games, which is something that they've been lacking. This team we've seen time and time again get down big and find a way to come back. But when you lose those guys in between the momentum changers, it's hard to make it happen. And we've seen them struggle to just get over that hump once they get down big.
Yeah, and you mentioned the momentum changers. You know, when things aren't going well, you can insert a Shane Larkin.
Right.
Brad, that's a secret weapon,
yeah.
You know, a Marcus Smart. And you're talking about two of your best on-ball defenders, too. Mm-hmm. And so I thought Sunday against Cleveland, the Cavs just looked comfortable in everything they did. I mean, they got to their spots offensively. They got into the Celtics defensively. And so I'm not going to panic because I don't do that anymore. But I will say, Brad mentioned it back in November when his team was on a 16-game winning streak. He didn't like the way they were playing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if much has changed, Sherrod, since then. Because they're still inconsistent.
Yeah, they are. And that's, you know, we're two-thirds of the way through the season, and you still don't really have a true sense of what's the identity of this team. I mean, are they a defensive-minded, get buckets where you can get them type team, which they've won that way, or are they a team that can just go out there and just light teams up? Because when you look at their personnel, you would think they have the potential to be that as well. They're trying to figure this out, but the big thing for them is to get healthy. When they have all their horses healthy, they are one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. But they're one of those teams where their success is going to be predicated on the sum being ready to go to war as opposed to key players. You're going to need Marcus Smart. You're going to need Shane Larkin. You're going to need them. And you're going to need Kyrie Irving to be a little more selfish. You look at that Cleveland game, he shot 50% from the field, but he took 14 shots.
That's not enough. I mean, Kyrie got to be at 20.
At 18 points. And if you're not scoring at a high clip, you damn sure better be dropping dimes. And
right.
I think he had like 3 assists.
They
need more from him. And it's not a question of whether he's got the talent. We all know he does.
Yeah.
But he has to bring it, particularly when the lights are bright like they were against his old team.
Yeah, and I thought he got off to a good start,
yeah.
Like we said. But, you know, as soon as he goes out of the game, this team has trouble scoring.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's Al Horford, maybe Jason Tatum. Remember the plan a month ago, 6 weeks ago, whatever it was? Tatum more so with the second unit.
Right.
Brad would take him out of the game early because they wanted him –
to be the leader.
To be the leader.
Right.
It hasn't happened. Is that too much on a rookie? I'm starting to wonder. And so are guys, you know, figuring out his game, the scouting report? Is he showing up more? I mean, what's going on with Jason Tatum? Because he's the key.
Two things. One, I think you're spot on. I think teams have figured him out more. Just in talking with scouts lately, they said the thing that you have to remember about rookies, you don't focus on what they do at the start of the season. It's what do they do after the All-Star break or around the All-Star break. Because at that point, you've got so much footage on what they can do at this level that you figure out their tendencies. You figure out what they like to do. You figure out what they're not very good at. And you develop your scouting report around those things. And I think what we're seeing, teams are not letting Jason Tatum chill in the corner, catch and shoot.
Right.
They're not going for those pump fakes that he loves to hit you with. When he likes to drive to the basket and likes to extend himself, take that kind of like pseudo Euro sort of kind of, but not really, step, they figured out how to defend that a lot better. I think that's part of it. But the other thing, too, is Terry Rozier has become a lot more aggressive after he started three games and had the triple-double and had 31 points.
Yep.
And that's taken a little bit away, I think, from Tatum, because when the point guard is looking to score more and you have to play off of him, you're chilling a lot more time now than you were before. And so I think those two factors have been really, I think, a big part of why Tatum just isn't just giving you them the big games that we're used to, because the Celtics, they're 31-9.
Yeah.
When he has 10 or more points, and they're 9-9 when he
doesn't. That's black and white right there. That shows you. Yeah. There's so many guys we can point to. Like, I don't think Al Horford is playing like he did to start the season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's, the way teams are defending him. I will say the way Toronto defended
great
him.
Game
yeah,
play.
Yeah.
Great game play.
The way they had. But, something needs to happen with this team. They added Greg Monroe, who, if I'm looking, I'm questioning his role a little bit, because they started Marcus Morris against the Cavs. Then Baines was the first big. And so I think Brad is still trying to figure out, how to use these guys.
A big part of this is trust. And it's nothing against Greg. He just hasn't been
He
hasn't been around long enough for Brad to trust him. And I know Brad will say he trusts all his players, but let's be real. There's certain players you trust more than others.
Right.
I mean, if you've got two kids and one of them is a straight-A student and the other one gets straight Fs, and you've got to give your money to one of them to go pick up something at the store, guess what? You trust them both, but obviously you're going to trust one more than the other. Brad is still working through that with Greg. And the thing I guess I'm a little surprised with, and it's still early, I get that. I always thought that once they got him, he would be a focal point in the second quarter. Like when you send Kyrie to the bench and Al, sometimes you would look for Greg Monroe to go to work. It didn't happen against Cleveland. And I'm not sure how much is going to happen going forward, but I think his ability to score has to be something that they take advantage of. And another thing about Greg, and this will be the last point I'll make on Greg, is that he's actually a better defender than I thought. When I went back and I looked at the numbers, his very first game, he actually had a better defensive rating than Aaron Baines, even though he played more minutes. But the crazy part about that, Aaron Baines had a better offensive rating than Greg. So it was completely crazy how that worked out. But the bottom line is he can give them things besides buckets. And I think that's something that Brad has to experiment with and get a better feel for going forward and develop that trust in Greg.
And we're going to ask Cedric Maxwell about all this and including the Cavaliers. Are you worried about the Cavs now a little more? I mean, let's be honest. They look like a different team, Sherrod.
They're a different team. And here's the thing. The part about all the changes they made that for me was the most concerning was when they got Rodney Hood. I could live with
Jordan. That's your guy. That's your guy, Rodney Hood.
I can live with them getting Clarkson because Clarkson is just feast or famine. He's getting buckets or he's turning over. And I can live,
with
George Hill. George Hill's just a good defender.
Very good, solid
player.
Yep.
But Rodney Hood is that wild card, that dude that can hit you for 20 and not even really be looking to hit you for 20. He's just running the floor, looking around. LeBron sees him open, throws in the ball. What the hell am I doing? Oh, I'm just going to raise up because they're not recognizing me. And I did not think that Utah got enough for him. That's a guy that is
What did they get? Jay Crowder. Because they cut Derrick Rose.
Jay Crowder. I love Jay Crowder.
Right.
I like the fact that he's going to Utah. Right. He's going to play, for the franchise that his dad played with. And that's all, Philly good and all that. But, damn. You gave up a young guy, like, in his early 20s.
Right.
Who everyone in the league knows on any given day can get you 20 points and only need, like, 5 or 6 shots to do it because he's got that sweet of stroke.
It's like teams rush to help the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
They bailed the Cavs out.
I can understand getting rid of Jordan Clarkson. I would have done that, too, if I'm the Lakers.
Right.
You don't see him as part of your future.
Right, he's not part of it.
And he's a good player, so you can get something of value for him. And he helps you from a financial standpoint. And, you know, Larry Nance, okay, take him, too. He gets to play in the same building his daddy played in. Yay for him. But Rodney Hood is the part that just pisses me off. Not going to lie. Because I love Rodney Hood. And watching him play this year for Utah – the world can see why I love Rodney Hood. He can play.
Dude, he can play.
He was supposed to be Gordon Hayward 2.0, not Donovan Mitchell.
Right. We sat in this Burlington office a week ago and said, the Cavs are in trouble.
They were.
I don't see how they get out of this.
Who could possibly want to help them?
Right.
And then everybody,
I got you here.
I got you, Kobe. Hey, Kobe Altman, I got you. What you need? What you need, Kobe? What you need?
Did they
get Kobe Altman mixed up with Kobe Bryant?
Dude.
Because I swear he got the Kobe treatment.
I was thinking, can there be simultaneously an executive who made maybe the worst trade in NBA history and who also wins the executive of the year?
Kobe has gone from what we like to call ashy to classy.
Right.
Ashy in terms of those whack – The whackness of the deals that he made, and to his credit, he had to because Kyrie forced his hand, and I get that. To now where he's looking like Bill Gates.
Right.
I mean, how did he get George Hill, Jordan Clarkson, Rodney Hood, Larry Nance Jr.? I mean, you've added 1 to 2 fringe starters and rotation players, and you got rid of every single not so great aspect of your team in the process.
Ridiculous.
Literally, the worst thing you got going for your team right now is J.R. Smith. And I'm not going to lie. If that's like the worst
that's
thing
the
I got
worst?
Going on, we doing okay.
Exactly. Before we get Cedric Maxwell
I'm
on
still
the line.
Pissed about that Rodney Hood
part. You're heated about
I'm,
that.
I've been trying not to think about it, but every time I think about it, I'm like, come on,
I
really?
Know. I
what,
know.
What would the Celtics have to – what would they have to give up to have gotten Rodney Hood?
Rodney Hood?
Yeah.
Oh, not much.
To see
in
what Cleveland
got. Let me think.
They would have had to give. But the thing about it, with Rodney Hood, the reason I'm so upset about it is because the role that he's being asked to play now. Mm-hmm. He's coming off the bench. He's going to be surrounded by at least 1 or 2 other shooters. And he's going to be surrounded by the guy with the greatest court vision in the game, LeBron James. In Boston, you're probably going to have to give up someone who's a pseudo-starter. You'd have to give up a Marcus Smart or someone like that. And – yeah.
Why is that, though? The Cavs didn't give up that.
They gave up Jay Crowder. Well, Utah has this belief that they need to be tougher.
Right.
They need to be tougher. And you talk to the folks in Cleveland and that I've spoken to the last couple of days. That was their disappointment in Jay Crowder.
They thought
he was going to be tougher than he was. And maybe it's just the scenery, just like they thought Isaiah would be a better scorer than he was. But Isaiah has, you know, the out that – he was out for 7
he's,
months.
He's 100%.
Jay Crowder didn't really have an excuse. I mean, Jay wasn't making shots, and he wasn't defending. That's a bad cocktail.
Right. That's a bad cocktail, Jay. Paul Pierce celebration.
Loved it.
Tremendous honor. You were in the building for that. I love seeing, you know, KG back, Rondo, Doc, just those guys back
and
together.
And Paul's suit game was tight.
He was looking nice. He was looking sharp.
Something I thought I would not be saying about Paul Pierce.
The Celtics did it right, though. Afterwards, let him have his, you know, the ceremony was an hour. I thought it was fantastic.
Well, yeah, the thing that people forget is that, you know, they point out how great Kobe's was, but Kobe's was like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was at half. So waiting after the game, and I think San Antonio, I think they waited after the game for Tim Duncan, which is a smart thing to do because, one, you don't have the constraints of trying to fit everything into this just small window of time. And, two, you give fans and that player a chance to really just embrace that moment.
Undivided
and just let it breathe.
Yeah,
even after we did the press conferences, Paul Pierce was still on the floor, shaking hands, kissing babies, taking pictures. We had finished doing our hits, and we're ready to go home. And Paul Pierce
He's
is still out
there.
I'm thinking like, man.
Hey, you got any trouble with Ray not being there?
People are tripping about this. Drapes, I know that's your boy.
That is my guy.
I know that's
but
your boy.
But hold up. Big Baby wasn't there. I didn't see Perk. I didn't see Tony Allen. Nobody. Hey, why are we talking about Ray?
I'm going to tell you why we're talking about Ray.
Why are you looking at me like
that? Because that's your boy.
You're about to scold me, Jay.
Because,
like, I'm going to tell you why.
Because here's why. Here's why. There is no beef with Big Baby. Big Baby just wasn't there.
Right.
There's no drama. There's no behind the scenes, any of that. Not only did Ray not show up? Ray's on the damn golf course taking but here's
what's wrong with it? You can't live your life? You can't go on?
Here's my biggest problem with that. We always think of Ray Allen as being the bigger man, the classy guy.
Yeah,
classy move, and you know I'm right on this, would have been to show up. You don't have to talk to anyone. And any reporter, media come up to you, you just say, look, I don't want to talk to y'all.
I'm here for Paul.
This is about Paul. I'm here to support him. That's my teammate. He got me.
But Sherrod.
That would have been the classy thing
to do.
Ray did not do the classy thing in this matter.
All right, you live in fairy tale land. I know.
I'm living in reality.
You live up in the castle with the Snow White, Cinderella. Everything's fine. And you're
Ray Allen's world.
Some guys just don't get along. And some guys, you can't force this. You're trying to force this, and I think the public is trying to force this. If Ray didn't want to be there, he didn't want to be there.
I'm going to tell you right now. If I got a teammate that I have issues with and we achieve something monumental as a group, I'm going to be classy enough to show up and show my respects.
Hey, he doesn't.
I'm not asking him to do anything but show up and just be respectful of the fact that that was your teammate. He is getting one of the greatest honors.
Who knows? He might have been afraid of KG and Rondo.
I'm not giving
him
that.
They might thump him or something. I don't know. Maybe that's, because he hasn't come face to face with those guys. That beef has not been squashed.
But you know what, though? Here's the thing. It's not about them. It's about Paul. And Paul set the table. When I sat down with him right after he got back from China, he made it clear that him and Ray there's
good.
No beef.
They're
and
good.
So if the man who's being honored that night has no beef with you, the men who are there to recognize and respect him, they better respect you,
but
too.
See, you're getting fired up. But
I'm getting fired up.
Call out the organization, too. How come Ray was not in the video? Ray should have been in the video. Did they ask him? I don't know. We need to get to the bottom of that, too. You had KG on there. You had Rondo. You had Doc. Ray Allen, to me, those guys will always be linked.
You want to make him the scapegoat. I get that because that's your boy.
No.
I respect that. But I'm going to tell you right now, Ray is a grown-ass man.
Right.
That man was a part of that banner going up there. And every single player on that team, whether you like Ray or not, recognizes that. Paul recognized that. That's why Paul was so willing to squash the beef when they got to China, because he wanted Ray to understand, you are a part of this. You are one of us. Yeah, you got beef with Rondo. Yes, you got beef with KG, but you know what? We're good. We are good. So if Paul's getting his jersey retired, you don't show up for that?
I didn't say he should not have been there. I never said that.
Well, that's the
impression
I got.
But I'm saying, to me, the beef isn't squashed. That's what that shows me. All is not all
Ubuntu
anymore.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say he showed up. You think that might go towards squashing the beef? If they didn't invite you, they didn't want you to be part of that, but you showed up anyway because you out of respect for Paul?
But you know what, Sherrod? And you're right. We've only heard from Paul. Paul says the beef is squashed. I haven't heard Ray say it's squashed. And in his mind, and I'm thinking, he doesn't think it's all squashed yet.
You know what?
He's still not comfortable.
Didn't
There's
he say that when
stupid.
We talked to him?
Huh?
Didn't we say that when we talked to him at the golf tournament a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, we did talk to him.
And he did say that me and Paul caught up. And I agree with
you. You're right.
Let me be clear about something. I absolutely love Ray Allen as a player. I want to be clear on this. I need to put the cookies on the bottom shelf so you can feast. You can eat good. I'm trying to treat you like Bradley Beal treat the Wizards so you can eat good. Listen, Ray is a cool dude, but he's wrong on this, Drapes. He's wrong as wrong can be. He should have been there for Paul because you know damn well if Ray's jersey was going up in Milwaukee or any other city, Paul would have made every effort to be there for him, and you know that.
I mean, you think Antoine has the best relationship with Danny and the rest of the organization?
Had Antoine on the podcast. But there ain't no secret.
Antoine's out there right now.
Though. He's trying to get – absolutely.
Ray's
doing this book tour where he's coming back. So he should be out there trying to smooth it over too.
That's not a good look. I agree. That is not a good look.
He should be – listen, I agree with Sherrod. He should have been there for his friend
So should Baby have been there?
If Baby could be there, yeah.
If he could
– should Tony Allen have been there?
But here's the thing, Drapes. First of all, we don't know what all those guys' schedules are like.
We know
Ray was playing golf. That's what we know.
If we didn't know that, you're right.
We could just be like, maybe Ray has something to do. Yeah, he out there playing with
George Lopez.
Drapes, imagine if Chief and Mikhail didn't show up for Bird's thing. Imagine if they didn't.
Right.
It would be,
But that would be the story. There's no beef between.
Oh.
Like I just said, things are not all patched up between those guys.
But somebody
let's not act like it is.
But somebody had the opportunity to be classy about it, and they took
he
a whiff. They decided to pull out the clubs.
All right, let's get Cedric Maxwell on. All right, I may be wrong on this one. Let's get Cedric Maxwell on the line.
Well,
we're going to talk about Paul Pierce, talk about the current state of the Celtics, and the new-look Cleveland Cavaliers. Cedric Maxwell jumping on the Celtics Talk podcast.
Trying to make that right turn on the left. What lonely way, man. You're wrong.
The 1981 NBA Finals MVP joining the Celtics Talk podcast right now, Cedric Maxwell. Max, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
Wonderful, wonderful.
Wonderful. Just trying to recover from Sunday's events. The Celtics put on a great show. Not on the court now. I'm not talking actual game. I'm talking about the Paul Pierce ceremony. You were a part of it. You were the last guy to have your number retired up there in the TD Garden rafters. Just sum up what yesterday meant for you.
Yesterday was a collection. It was almost like a kaleidoscope. Viewing Paul Pierce and saying, you know, he's retired, the number is going up. I just absolutely love it because he was not only, I say that, he was my friend. And when you think about having a guy who was your friend and you hung out with, that's a beautiful thing to see his number go up in the rafters.
And Max, as someone who has had that been fortunate enough to have that happen, what does that mean to a player in this league to have your number retired?
By the Boston Celtics, that's what you say. I mean, you're talking again about the franchise, which is the cornerstone of the NBA, professional basketball. Won more championships than anybody else. And you look at, no offense, I've said this a dozen times, but no offense to the people at Springfield, the Basketball Hall of Fame, but the Basketball Hall of Fame would be right in the Boston Garden if you look up in the rafters and you look at those numbers and the banners. That is that's a true measure of, the consistency and the championship-driven stuff. And to be one of those elite people that has had your number retired, I mean, we're talking forever. Your kids can go in there, 40 years from now, and like, whose number that? They might not remember what it was, but they can always look it up, and you'll be part of history.
Max, you're right about that. It's not like, Pierce had his number retired by a franchise that had never won a championship or only has one. I mean, when you look up there in the TD Garden rafters, you got all those numbers up there and spanning from, the 50s to current day. What was interesting, though, your former teammate Robert Parrish had some very interesting comments and called Paul Pierce the best offensive player in Celtics history. Now, the Celtics have had some great ones. Larry Bird, your former teammate. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the eras have changed. And if you look at the way this era is now, Paul Pierce would be that way. Because Larry Bird probably would be the greatest in terms, if you think about, if he had the three-point shot, would have been a real, real weapon during this time. Remember, Larry Bird in his first championship game in 1981 against the Houston Rockets. For the entire game, there was, I think, 5 three-pointers attempted in the last game. There are 5 three-pointers attempted in two seconds, seems like, now in the NBA. So Larry's perspective has really changed. You look at Larry's terminology, the way he played the game is really different than the way Paul Pierce had to play the game now.
That is the truth. And No pun intended there.
Wow, you're like, that was
right.
really good. Damn.
Yeah, I went there, didn't I? Did I not?
Yeah, you know this is Black History Month. They're not going to allow you to use all of
them. Oh, nice comeback, Cedric. Speaking of comebacks, we were kind of hoping that the Celtics would pull one off because that's kind of what they do this year. But obviously that didn't work out against the Cleveland Cavaliers. They've lost 3 of their last 4, Cedric. You see all the games just like I do. Those 3 losses, they've gotten down really, really big by 20-plus points in each of them and wound up losing. Is this just kind of a, I don't know, things are kind of settling out as far as this Celtics team because they won a lot of games like that earlier? Or is this something that to be concerned about going forward?
I think both. I think a little bit of it's like, if you look at the stock market, how it corrected all of a sudden, corrected itself. I don't think the Celtics were as good as their record was, but they're not as bad now as these last couple of games. There's some place in the middle. This is a good team. But you're talking about a team now that has been kind of rolling the dice over and over again. You know, you don't have one of your best players. The one of the best players that you were going to pick up was Gordon Hayward. You have him for 5 minutes of the season. You're depending on a rookie right now who's had a really good year, but kind of hit a wall a little bit when you think about the way Tatum has played. Jaylen Brown has had a good year, but things have kind of settled. And you think about the bench that you've had. You depended on a lot of younger players to kind of get you through. Now, in the second part of the season, teams are starting to see them, maybe figure them out a little bit. And so you have to kind of change gears. And I think for the Celtics, it's a blessing right now that the All-Star break is about to come so they can kind of retool what they need to do to take off to the next level.
Max, and one guy you mentioned, I mean, Jason Tatum, when he plays well, the Celtics win. When he doesn't, they lose. It's pretty much that simple. He was playing great earlier this season. Is it just teams figuring him out, a rookie wall? What does he need to do to get back to being Jason Tatum?
Well, I think one of the things he has not done as much is he's doing a lot. If you watch him, he's doing a lot more pump faking instead of just taking the shot, you know, of just trying. And the scouting report is probably that. He's going to give you the pump fake, try to get you in the air, stay on your feet, and make him make the adjustment. Before, he was making the defender make the adjustment. Now it's kind of turned around, and we'll see if Jason is smart enough to figure that out. I think he should be. You know, you have a great coaching staff, and he's going to be a dynamic player, but he has to figure out how to change. It's like guys sitting there waiting for the fastball, and then you throw him a curve. It's like, oh, whoa, what was that? So I think that's what he has to do in this game.
And speaking of curveballs, you know, the Celtics certainly did not anticipate that they would spend these last couple of weeks without Marcus Smart. When you think about this Celtics team, and you look back at that Cleveland game, I mean, they're guards, but I'm thinking specifically Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson. They absolutely torched the Celtics.
Yeah.
Is that kind of just one of those reminders of how important a guy like Marcus Smart is to this team? Because he's not one of the stars of the team, but it seems that that was one of those games where, man, if you could have Marcus Smart for one game, that was the type of game you needed him.
Well, you think about it, over the last couple games, when, you know, without Marcus Smart, those are kind of – Clarkson kind of just went off, got where he wanted to go. Hood got where he wanted to go. And you don't have one of your best defenders. So you did miss Marcus, and it shows you really how valuable he is to this team. Everybody complains, oh, my God, Marcus is always shooting. I don't want him shooting anymore. But the way he defends, Jackie McMullen, the great sports writer here in Boston, said that. She said – to me, she said, I go watch Marcus Smart play on the defensive end. And she said, every single night, I see something that I've never seen before a player do on the defensive end. And that's how valuable he is to this team.
And but that's the thing, Max. He's valuable, but yet he's maddening also. I mean, you know, in the middle of the season when you need him most, you know, going into the Clippers game. Then you got Golden State. He goes out there and cuts his hand up. And so as a franchise, you know his value and you want him on your team. But then I think this offseason, Danny Ainge has to really think, you know, is it worth it? What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, there's no question. I think that Danny's going to make that decision. The management will make that decision about, you know, how dependable is Marcus. And you say, you look at these games that he's missing right now, and there's no question you could use him. You know, could you use him against Beal the other day when Beal was going crazy in Washington? I mean, Marcus is that valuable, but you have to decide one way or the other if you're going to invest in Marcus and go the long-term route. And that's a great question for Danny and the people there in the office.
Right. Well, for now, obviously Marcus is still with the Celtics, and – again, you look at the moves that a lot of teams made at the trade deadline, specifically Cleveland. Where do you see the Celtics now in the East? I mean, it seemed like just a week and a half ago. Actually, it was like a week and a half ago. They were the best team record-wise in the East, and now it seems that there's some other guys who are kind of at the front of the pack, too, with them.
How many times have the Celtics been written off this year which, you know, playing poorly. And I think Charles Barkley said they were the fifth best team in the Eastern Conference.
Terrible, Max. Terrible.
How many times has that changed? And I think that depends on, you know, the day of the month, you know, what day it is, if they're playing really well. If this team is playing at its best, at its peak, it's one of the top teams in the East. When they don't play on the defensive end and don't rebound, this team all of a sudden becomes a team that any team could beat. And you think about when they came from London, everybody said, well, the easy part of the schedule is coming now. The Celtics are really going to get on the road. They come home after London and lose three straight games. And at that time, Orlando was one of the worst teams in the league. So I think that people are looking at this team different. And it depends on, you know, the day of the week that you see them play. But this still is a very, very good team. I don't know if they're good enough to win a championship, but what I know is that they have a tremendous future with their draft picks, with their players, with their coach. And then still, as you said, haven't even talked about that one of the main acquisitions of Gordon Hayward being one of those guys who's going to come in and make your team that much better.
You're right, Max. And you know, one thing, you know, we saw yesterday or saw Sunday at the Garden, the Celtics didn't play their best basketball. But if you're a fan watching what the Cleveland Cavaliers were able to do, to me, Max, I don't care what was going on before, you know, the trade deadline, what was going on last week. This looks like a different Cavs team. And I know personnel-wise it is, but even LeBron James, his body language is a whole lot better. How afraid should we be of what Cleveland has been able to do at the trade deadline and after that one game we saw on Sunday?
I think, you know, everybody can – you can all of a sudden jump conclusions after one game. But what did you see? What you – your eye test, the eyeball test was the fact that this team right now is a more athletic team when you look at Cleveland. They are better defensively right now with guys out on the floor. Their body language was completely different. But they do have some wild cards, which are out there, which were you saw yesterday. J.R. Smith, you don't know if he can shoot you in or shoot you out of a game. J.R. Smith yesterday, when he took that first shot in the corner, it was a long pass. The ball was about to go out of bounds. J.R. Smith called in the corner, turned around in one motion, and knocked it down. That's when you know you're going to have a long night with J.R. Smith. There are times when he has just been unbelievable, and there's times when he has struggled. But they shot the light out of the ball. And you add into this is people, you know, you look at this team, add Kevin Love into the mix later on in the season. How much better will they be then? But what they did, this is what would make me afraid, is the fact that they jettisoned all the negativity that they had. And this team looks like a completely different team. As you said, looking at LeBron, the way he felt. We loved Isaiah. We loved Jay Crowder. That fit was poisonous to what they were doing. They just didn't – that did not work out well. And I talked to a couple of people with the Cavaliers, and they said, well, the problem was that Isaiah came in there chirping about, you know, we did this in Boston and we should do this and do that when he really hadn't played well. So if you go in saying that to guys and you haven't played well, you haven't really proven yourself to make those kind of statements. And frankly, it just didn't work out for him.
Yeah. And the crazy part about that is that you look at Isaiah Thomas, you look at Jay Crowder, heck, you even look at Evan Turner. It seems that guys found great success in Boston, and yet the minute they leave, that success isn't nearly at the same level, whether it's team or individual. Why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think guys have kind of found that fountain of talent in Boston, but they thirsty when they leave here for that?
Well, I think one of the things that you look at is you're touching on it but not touching on it. Is Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens is the common denominator. When Evan Turner was here, Brad Stevens did one thing was really brilliant with him that nobody else has done in this league. They give Evan Turner the ball late in the basketball game and let him get to his spots where he wants to get. That's how he was so successful here. He was given the ball. Isaiah, how is he so good? He was allowed to take his shots when he wanted to, and they insulated him defensively with the rotation and all those things. of trying to help Isaiah out defensively. What happened when he went to Cleveland? Not insulated, picked on all the time on the defensive end, and not shooting the ball well. Evan Turner goes out to Portland. What happens? He doesn't get the ball because you have great guards there. You don't get it late in the basketball game. So he is not and will never be a spot-up shooter. And that's what you're asking Evan Turner to do.
All right, Max, we're going to get out of here with this. Usually you're the best-dressed man at the TD Garden, especially when I'm not there. But I will say Sunday, your boy Paul Pierce brought it, man. You both brought it. I mean, you were looking sharp too, but I got to say, you and Paul, you guys brought it on Sunday, man.
Well, you know what? I've seen Paul grow in stature, not only as a player, but as a fashion icon now. You know, Paul Pierce, when he first got here, he was straight out of Compton. Okay? Let's just put it that way. I don't think that Paul Pierce was dressed like that, whoever his coordinator is now. And, you know, and the thing about Paul Pierce is he still looks like he's in great shape. And he's worked at maintaining that. Now, there's some of his ex-teammates that look like they were struggling a bit.
I ain't going there, man. I'm not going there. I'll let you handle that one.
Struggling just a bit when it came to, you know, pushing away from the table. So I think that you look at Paul Pierce, his physique really looked good. He looked good in his sports jacket yesterday. And, you know, just you didn't see that with Paul. I think Paul Pierce's brother made a big joke at the dinner. And he said that Paul Pierce was working out for Toronto, and Toronto flew him up. And people didn't know who Paul Pierce was when he was doing his first workout for the Toronto Raptors. And they said, well, who are you? And Paul Pierce said to the people without even blinking, said, we're supermodels just coming through. So, you know, by saying that, Paul Pierce has really changed his whole stature when it's come to dressing.
All right, Max. Thanks for jumping on the podcast, man. We'll have to do it again. Next time we'll see you is Wednesday. And trust me, I'm bringing my A-game suit. Why? Sherrod always does. And so we'll see you on Wednesday.
We'll holler.
All right, bro. Good stuff from Max on the Celtics.
The well-dressed Cedric Maxwell.
I need to shop at his clothing store. But he goes overseas, though. Yeah, this is in China or something like that. I can't afford that, man. Come on now. Max is – I mean, I can't even afford the plane ticket. Let's keep it real. Max has his number up there.
Yep.
Pierce has his number up there.
Yep.
Who's next of the current guys?
Of the current guys, I'm going to go with Kyrie.
Hold on, it's tough. It is not tough. What's so tough about that? He's the best player on the current team.
Because he's going to be here long enough.
Yeah, I'm not sold that he's going to be here long enough. My gut tells me it's going to be Gordon Hayward, who I don't think is ever going to leave Boston. I don't think he will ever leave Boston. And he's going to put up the kind of numbers in the course of his career where he's going to be in that conversation. He's going to make 2, 3, 4 all-star teams before all said and done, on top of the one he's already made. I'm flip-flopping right now. I'm going to do a Drapes and flip-flop. I'm going to go with Gordon Hayward. So I think he'll be the next one.
I'm going Kyrie Irving because I think he will be here long enough. Got a few years left on his contract after this maybe. I think the Celtics will re-sign him. He'll get that super max. He'll get all kinds of dough. He's going to be here long enough.
Here's the other reason why I'm going to go with Gordon. Because I think Gordon is going to be done playing before Kyrie. I think Kyrie's going to have a longer career because he's younger.
Oh, Sherrod.
Their numbers.
Very logical.
That to me makes a lot of sense. I think Gordon's going to have a good career, but I think Kyrie's going to have a longer one.
That's interesting. I think.
How many rings is Gordon going to have?
Got to get one. I think he'll have two, though. I think he'll get two.
Dang!
I think he'll get
you're
two.
Predicted two. So hold up. How old is Gordon Hayward?
Gordon's 20, like 28.
27, 28.
Yeah,
27,
so 28. Two rings in the next 6 years or so, we're thinking?
Six, seven
okay,
years.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Will Kyrie be a part of that or no?
Yeah. I think Gordon will be the next one, and Kyrie will be after him because Gordon's career will end before Kyrie's.
Nobody's going to say Anthony Davis?
No, I'm not going there. Hey, let's keep
Tang
it real.
Tang Wei, where are you?
Before Gordon gets his retired, he's going to have to change numbers because my guy Ray Allen, that number 20,
Oh my god!
All right,
gosh.
No, I'm not going there.
Don't even go there.
Really show up for that? Is Ray going to
show
up?
Not even show up for that.
I thought you were going to say
there'll be nobody
Rondo.
There. Nobody will
like,
be there.
No, nah, giving Rondo. I mean, Demetrius yeah. Jackson has right after Rondo left. That, so that told Rondo all he need to know.
Two Rays at the office.
Right.
Nobody will be there.
Nobody will be there. Hey, I know you did have a chance to talk to Gordon Hayward. What stood out to you from your conversation?
You know what? I mean, he talked about traveling with the team next month, which is something that Brad has mentioned to us, and Gordon just kind of confirmed that. But I didn't realize just how impactful Paul Pierce and his time in Boston was on Gordon. He was telling me about how, when he first got to the league, he was kind of in awe of all the superstars, Paul included, and they were so much bigger, stronger, and faster than he thought they would be when he first faced them. But he also was really drawn to Boston, the Celtics, because of the legacy that Paul Pierce had left, a guy that didn't exactly have all the measurements to be a great star. He went through some tough times in Boston, stuck it out, and in the end came out better for the experience. And he wanted to be part of that and add to that. So that was kind of cool from Gordon. But, look, I'm not thinking he's going to be back tomorrow. I'm not
this season?
I still think it's a long shot. I'm right now, if you put a gun to my head and say, is he coming back or not? I'm going to say not. I just don't think it's going to happen.
All right, Jason, crazy. Over there, you sound disgusting.
He's
like,
coming
ah.
back.
I'm not going to go there. Here's, I'm not going
to
go there.
The question is, does he go back to Utah March 28th?
That's a great question.
He's traveling with the team.
I mean, is he going to be an IT type situation and say, don't give me this, give it to me next year? No.
And I don't know if them fans are going to shower him with love. I still think there's some bitterness out there.
I think a lot of
Utah people, they're nice. That'll be nice.
I don't know. You saw him during Summer League, bro.
I think a lot will just depend on where Utah is record-wise at that point. I mean, is Spider Mitchell, if he's busting kids.
And they're playing well.
And they're playing well.
They're like,
whatever.
Jay Crowder.
If they're headed to the lottery.
Oh, that's right. Jay Crowder.
Oh, Jay Crowder there. Oh, that's going to be awesome.
They can't cheer for Gordon. They can't cheer for Gordon because they're going to flip out.
Oh,
it's the reverse.
But remember that game, though. That was like one of Jay's
best
games all season. When the Celtics fans were cheering for Gordon before he became a Celtic.
Jay might go for 20 plus.
He might go for 25 that night.
You're right.
They're cheering for him when he's not here. They're cheering for him when he's not here.
I can't win.
All right, man. Let's get out of here. Another great episode of the Celtics Talk Podcast. Thanks to Cedric Maxwell for jumping on the podcast. Don't forget, we also got Quick Slants, the podcast, bringing you a new episode on Tuesday with Tommy Curran, Phil Perry, and Gerard Mayo. Looking ahead to the offseason, make sure you subscribe to any of our NBC Sports Boston podcast on any of your favorite apps. Ray Sherrod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll see you next time on the Celtics Talk Podcast.
We out!